Well, welcome back to Reflections. Your host, Jorge Gonzalez. At the end of the first segment, I was when we're talking about Iran and reflecting on a trip that we took in 2013 to Iran and articles that I wrote subsequently. When I take trips, there's you know, besides wanting to visit someplace and getting to know them pretty well, you're always missing a lot, but getting to know them pretty well, and instead of hopping from one place to the other, a couple of days here, a couple of days there, and so that's one of the things we try to do. And the other thing I have always done is taken a lot of pictures, and initially with slides, and then starting in the 90s, it was video. Videos are more challenging, but I have a lot of advantages in the sense that you get the sound and the movements and all. And it has the challenges of you have to have a transition. You can't be jumping from one thing to the other. It has to be beginning and an ending. It's like a movie. And, of course, a particular challenge in my case, because I didn't edit after. It's kind of like this program. I don't edit after. It goes. It is what it is. But it has to have, some transitions, a beginning and an end, and transitions as we go from topic to topic, and hopefully some things that synchronize and tie things together. But in any case, I take videos, and then I write articles, on the experiences, sometimes while I'm there, sometimes, after. So these are four articles on Iran. So that was the one I'm on right now is called Dogs and Cats in Iran. And it's then continuing on, it says, for the Iranians, their country has the shape of a cat looking straight at you. You would expect it to see many cats, but Iranians do not believe in pets. In fact, the cat is the only animal tolerated. Nevertheless, even the cat is not brought into the home as a pet, but communally fed and kept outside. The dog is considered under Islamic law unclean. The only healthy dogs one sees are those belonging to nomads, but these are working dogs for their goats and sheep. And one sees few cats and all, but let me just skip. Then, before we went, Pinky, my wife, ran into an Iranian couple with her kid, and they had all kinds of conversations, and they're very friendly from the very beginning. Pinky came back just some really thrilled, and they gave the names of people, the family members that they had in Iran, that in case we had any problems, and then they lived in Washington D.C. And I'm quoting now from the article. And to Pinky's delight, the young son remarked at the end of the day that it was the best day he had spent in Puerto Rico. I am sure this was typical Iranian taruf, that word I mentioned before, a word that encompasses a great deal of Iranian character and culture. On the one hand, taruf involves exaggerated compliments, as this young boy may have been expressing, as well as the offering of one's goods and services that are not always expected to be accepted. You probably have to be Iranian to know. In Puerto Rico, we do this with the phrases, está en su casa, this is your home. When someone comes to your house, or a la orden, at your order, when someone praises one's article of clothing or one's boat or car. Such offers are not expected to be taken seriously. How cultures clash can be depicted by two stories. One comes from an Iranian family moving to England. When her new neighbor praises her silverware, the Iranian expressed that she did not use it very often, that it was a pain to keep clean, and that she would be happy to have the neighbor have them. This is much more expressive than, a la orden, but now this is what we would say in Puerto Rico. You can imagine the Iranian lady's surprise when the next day the English lady's butler appeared to take away the silverware. I just love that story, Our Iranian guide told me his similar story. When in Toronto, he was invited to dinner by various Canadian friends. When the check arrived, he offered in a typical taruf gesture to pay the bill and to pay the bill. And much to his shock, the others thanked him for his offer and allowed him to pay. Humad Majd, M-A-J-D, his excellent book that was recommended by the Museum of Natural History is one of the things we should read before we went on the trip. At that time on contemporary Iran, titled The Ayatollah Begs to Differ, refers to this modality of taruf as, and quote, insincere but well-intentioned politeness. This is on page 39. According to Majd, taruf also involves the extensive, long-winded pleasantries that can be frustratingly long but are customary prelude to the formal matter at hand. We in Puerto Rico can relate to this since we feel it is necessary to exchange pleasantries prior to getting down to business. But from the sounds of it, Iranians take this to a much higher level. Finally, taruf also involves a sly use of words to deliver a message far different from what is being orally stated. A case in point is President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad's denial of the Holocaust, which one Iranian explains is only a strategy to have the proud Germans defend themselves by accepting once again that they committed this great horror. Of course, as often happens with taruf at all levels, there will often remain a certain degree of ambiguity with regards to the ultimate meaning of the words used. Are not cats like this? We are an open book dog. I'm thinking more Puerto Rico and the U.S. We need to keep in mind that the Iranians are often a closed book cat. This tongue-in-cheek, story, the dog and cats in Iran, has a lot of truth to it, in my home, we used to shy away from cats, and now we have in Calle, one was killed by some pretty vicious dogs, incidentally, about 4 weeks ago, a disaster. But we have two there, and Pink Pinky has now fallen in love with cats, as well as dogs. I don't know how you listeners, are you a dog or a cat fan, or you can't stand either, but they're very different personalities, and Iran is like the cat. The third article is titled Iranian Dress Code. And this you confront from day one. There's a couple of things from day one when you're organizing what to take and all. One of the first things that was kind of a shock is, of course, you need a visa. That is normal a lot of places still, but your passport cannot have entries to Israel. So if you happen to have visited Israel, you had to get a new passport because that would not be accepted. But the second thing that you have to sort of put in is the kind of clothing for Iran, and as we all know, they're very strict laws and regulations and customs with respect to the dress, especially for women, but even for men. So, men wear normally long sleeve shirts. You see very few with anything above the elbow, and you don't see men in shorts and Bermudas, and of course women have to have their dress go down to the ankles and only bare their face. Their head has to be covered, as well as their neck, and just their hands. One of the things in this article, I've had some fun on it. Pinky purchased a black coat, which is what she when on the plane everybody's is dressed as normal, but as you're starting to land in Tehran, Everybody starts putting on the special clothing, and Pinky puts on her black raincoat and covers her hair, and I took relatively conservative shirts and pastel colors, black and beige and brown and white shirts, not very colorful. And Pinky took, that black, raincoat and very sober colored scarves. It turned out that it didn't have to be that bland, the colors. And one of the things that, I don't want to read this particular article, again, it would a little bit long, but they're about a page and a half each. But what was kind of fun was to watch two aspects. One of them was to watch the women kind of toying with the margins. They would have the limonio, the bun in their hair up, and there from there they would have the scarf, from that going over their neck, and the necks would be covered, but the hair was you could see, and the scarves were very colorful, and some of them had heels. You could see their ankles, so they were testing, and at that time there were crackdowns, but it wasn't as bad as it got or it was before. It was like Vietnam, things were loosened, and China, when we went, things were loosened up and then crackdowns. And at that moment, it was a little bit, let's say, a positive development that it was a question whether it was going to last or not. The fashion show of the women with the scarves and all. I said here, this departure from the no makeup and the classic black chador provided a special kind of fashion show on the shopping streets and bazaars that some call mall veiling. In quote. The other aspect that was kind of interesting is the public dress code and all, and apparently that we did not visit any homes and all, but they understand that in the homes the people were quite different, very much laid back, and you could see from clothing that was being sold at the different bazaars and the different stores and retail stores, that the clothing that was being used within the homes was really quite different, very relatively sexy stuff, the other thing that kind of was interesting and that's it. I says one striking phenomena, and I'm quoting from the article, my article, is the interest in plastic surgery of the nose by men and women. Since one often saw patched noses and black eyes in public, they seemed to be proudly exhibited. Pinky witnessed one young lady complaining with tears of how much pain she was suffering. Boy, I wonder if this was not in part Taroof, a proud boasting. That was another thing that was kind of the Iranian, the Persian nose is it turns to be relatively pronounced, and some of them they took these plastic surgeries, which was all always was kind of interesting. Quite a few, people going around with that, with the bandages, in that respect. We had one lady from Minnesota who I guess because she had access to this Muslim clothing was very good, with her chador and all. We called her the nun, but she was a great, great person. So that was the Iranian dress code. And which leads me to the final article, which is a woman in Iran. There was a juxtaposition that was interesting, because women there were accountants and lawyers and government officials and architects, really well educated in the profession and the businesses, top positions. Like happens in Puerto Rico and the U.S., there's still a long ways to go to be treated equally. I mean, don't get me wrong, but they are in all the professions. But the educational system is gender, just women and women with women teachers and women coaches and all, and men, separated. And there's this, besides the dress code that we just been discussing, there's these areas that sometimes don't make sense. For example, in the mosque, the women and the children enter through another door, a different door, and they have a section of the mosque set aside for them. The same happens in the public transportation of the buses, a separate entrance, a separate area for the women and the children. And in sports, with the big sports, the soccer, the wrestling, women aren't allowed to go to the stadiums. The explanation by the guide was that they were kept from eliciting foul language and arguments and that kind of thing. Instead of saying, well, the men should behave, they'll just keep the women out. And of course, the other thing is credible respect between the genders. So, the man will not touch a woman. There was and going back to the article, our U.S. tour guide, Devon, told me a funny story that depicts how ironic discrepancies happen when practical needs confront gender rules. Men are not allowed to touch women without permission. On one occasion, Devon's stomach sickness led to dehydration, requiring an emergency visit to the hotel by a male doctor. The remedy was a shot to the buttock cheek. There she was, dressed with only her face and hands showing, and yet having to bare her neck, her buttock, for the shot. And this is the woman, as you said, there's guides from outside, and this was Devon, and then there's guides within the country. My memory then the story my wife had a funny experience. As happens continuously, a group of young men very respectfully commenced a conversation with her and another female tour member one evening as we walked the prettiest of the seven Esfahan bridges. One of the young men asked her, "Can I touch you?" She was initially taken back by the question, but soon realized by his movement that he was asking permission to shake her hand. Pinky's a redhead, and Hector's waving. I can't believe the second save is all over. Pinky's a redhead, and one of the things that people sort of, in the Middle East and in Asia, they just kind of, just stare at her and sometimes even ask to touch the hair. So that was the expression, at all. So anyway, we run out of time. I'll finish a little bit on the situation of women in Iran from my point of view, which is the fourth and last article on Iran, and then give my impressions of what's happening and what with Iran, given my past experience and very little knowledge of the present political situation. So this is Jorge Gonzalez, Reflections. We'll be right back after the pause.